Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast, a special edition. Joining me is Kyle Porter, and joining us is CBS analyst Doug Gottlieb. Doug, what's going on, man?
Just a great NCAA tournament. Getting ready to call, Oregon and St. Joe's and Maryland, Hawaii. So pretty excited about the closing up shop here on Sunday of the second round of the tournament.
It's been a crazy tournament, no doubt. We've had you on a couple times on the podcast, and I thought you were very professional about the way you answered some of the questions about the Oklahoma State basketball job, and out of respect to Travis, you wouldn't go too far. But that job's open now. What's your interest level in the head coaching position at OSU?
What is the highest possible level of interest somebody could have? what's the term for that?
I'm not sure.
Okay,
you're a better wordsmith.
And then if it goes to 10, then this one goes to 11. Now that's a Spinal Tap. Reference. You guys are a little young for Spinal Tap, but my interest goes to 11.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see all this play out, Doug, and I think that the main criticism that people have is that, you know, you've never coached before. Why this? Why now? Whatever. What do you say to people who say, well, you won't be successful at this because you've never coached before?
Well, it's a valid criticism if you don't know me or my background, or you haven't listened to me call a college basketball game, been around me when I'm around teams, or understand my life, my way of thinking. It's completely valid to wonder. I think it's closed-minded to think, well, that won't work. That's a dumb idea. That's just, if there are boxes in which you have to check in order to be a successful head coach, experience would be one of them. But I would actually say that playing point guard at the high school level, AAU level, collegiate level, touring around against other colleges, playing professionally overseas and domestically in the CBA, in the ABA, in the USBL, playing in NBA summer leagues. Like, that's actual experience coaching. You're a point guard. You're coaching the team. You have to have the same communication skills. You have to have same ability to motivate teammates, to read teammates. You have to see the game differently. And then the one place to which I think people can understand my vision within a game is Oklahoma State, because I saw things other people didn't see, and I saw them before they would happen. That's how you're able to do what I could do, despite the fact I couldn't shoot a lick. You know, you have to be a perceptive, either analyst or coach or player, in order to be able to do what I've done. And then if you listen to me call a game, I think you have a great sense that I understand the subtle nuances and the not so subtle nuances of the game. It's still a leap of faith, but I was raised in the gym since the time I was 2 months old. I went to my first game, actually 2 weeks old, I think. I don't know. The story gets better, but 2 months old wouldn't make sense. It'd be March. My dad was head coach at Milwaukee. And this is, basketball is our family business. And so this would make total sense to me and people who know me and many people in the profession. I think it's to the lay person who sits there and says, okay, wait, I don't get it. Don't you have to have coached before? The great thing is that in the Big 12, you have a perfect example with Fred Hoiberg. In the NBA, you have plenty of examples from Jason Kidd to Steve Kerr to even Mark Jackson did a good job before he fell out of favor with the Golden State Warriors. You can look back historically when Bob Knight got his first job. He was a head coach. He'd never been an assistant, and to Pat Riley, et cetera, et cetera. But so to answer your question, if you want to consider criticism, that's fair. I don't think it should be deemed criticism. It should be deemed a question. Here's a question on your resume. This is, you don't have. And then you start to say, wait a second now. I've covered college basketball. I've been a part of the sport ever since I left the sport as a player. I played at a very, very high level for a long time, and I still continue to play to this day. I've stayed up on the trends in the game. I've studied the best of the game, and I just, like when I put together a radio show, it's the same idea. Take the parts of who you like and put them together. So I would do this over this podcast. You guys can feel free to ask me any question. And, you know, if some people will like the answer, some people don't. But I'm not defensive about the question of not having coached, because I think it's a fair question. And if you're going to be a head coach, there's going to be people who are critical of anything you do, of any part of your background. And how you respond to it speaks to what type of person you are, what type of leader you be.
And Doug, you've talked about being able to go around the country with your job. I think there's a big misconception that all you do is sit behind a microphone and call games and talk about basketball. What have you gleaned, and what advantages do you have with the job you've had by going to schools, going to practices? Just give us some insight on all the knowledge you've gathered with your job at CBS.
Well, here's the first thing. First thing is this. We can cut through it, and I can talk about all the things I've learned. You do learn more from doing. I completely understand that. As a head coach, I'd be more concerned, or more, if I'm hiring, it would be more about not having been a head coach, to be totally honest, than having been a coach, period. You know, because when you're a head coach, you are making decisions. Now, let's start. The first and most important thing is this. There is not a room, a gym in the country that I can walk into that people don't know me. Now, not everybody's going to like me, because my job has called for me to be opinionated. And so there are some people, more fans than players. Players don't get their feathers ruffled when you say one team is better than the other. Fans get that. Players don't. What they do, and high school AU coaches and high school coaches and mentors and circle of influence people, they know that I know ball. They know that I'm involved in the AU circuit. They know that I know all college basketball, how it works, how the NBA works, agents, etc. And so there's not a gym in the country that I can walk into to which people don't know who I am. I'm ahead of anybody you can hire at Oklahoma State, because regionally, nationally, doesn't matter. I'm already somebody that they know. And recruiting is about relationships. It's about winning the room. It's about winning the circle of influence. It's about the parents or the mom or the AU coach or the hanger-on trusting you, knowing you, saying, I'm going to send my kid to play for you because he'll be safe and you have his best interests at heart. Combine that with the 40 years, 50 years that my dad had in the exact same business. And there's not a college gym, a high school gym I walk into that somebody didn't know my dad. And you combine that with my brother, who's been doing it for 20 years. Our name in the business is one, I think, generates respect, but two, more than anything, it's one to which there's already a relationship built. And so I think sometimes we get caught up in looking at these big details of what did you learn from watching Jay Wright practice this year? I learned a lot. What do you learn from watching games which Mark Turgeon coaches? I learned a lot. I think there's all these different interesting approaches to how you guard a ball screen, transition offense, transition defense, different ways to teach fundamentals every day. Like, all of these things are interesting and important, but let's just be honest, guys. Nothing gets done unless you get dudes, right? If you don't have the Joes, it doesn't matter about the X and O's. You're going to forever bump into that ceiling. So the first thing is that there's not a gym I can walk into to which I'm not already a known commodity. And there was a relationship there. And so that's because these kids are 16 years old. And I don't think necessarily that being on TV is that important. And I try and tell that to my kids every day. Hey, Dad, my friend saw you on TV. Like, that's not important. But I'm also well aware that kids think that people who are on TV are more important than people who aren't on TV. And so if you think about it, you're in high school right now. You're 16 years old. I've been on TV for 13 years. There's not a march that you haven't turned on and seen me on ESPN or on CBS. That's powerful. And I don't want to use it for every coaching job, but this one I do. And I think it would be a tremendous advantage. Now, as far as traveling the country and calling games, you learn a ton. I mean, I can tell you that without any question, two best practices I've ever seen, maybe three now that I've seen Villanova this year. Randy Bennett at St. Mary's, Brad Stevens at when he was at Butler, and some of the things I took from some of the things I really like from what Jay does with this team, with the veteran group. But like the great thing about me not having the resume of coaching. Just I encourage somebody to listen to me call a game. And sure, there's some opinion in there, but I think you can tell that I not only studied it and know it, but have a feel for what should be done and what I would be doing if I was in their chair. My goal has always been as a broadcaster. I know I have to do my job, and I know I have to make what I say relatable to the common fan. You can't just simply talk in basketball terms because nobody knows what you're talking about. It's like somebody trying to explain to you binary code. Like, yeah, I'm lost on it. On the other hand, what I really want and what the greatest thing anybody can ever say to me is when a college coach calls me and says, hey, everything you said, I said at the exact same time or slightly thereafter or right before you said it about the game. And I've had several, that's the respect that I'm looking for. I don't do my job to try and be liked. I do my job to try and be respected by people within the profession of basketball because I think they're tremendously knowledgeable. I've taken things just like instead of going to clinics, which coaches go to in the off season and when they're growing up, I've gone to actual practices. I watch actual game tape. I go and sit in on film sessions. I talk to coaches. I know players. And so that's what I've been able to glean from doing my job. And yes, it's totally fair if you don't know me, follow me, hang out with me, that you think I sit in a booth and I just spout off opinions. The reality of it is I've tried to fully invest myself in basketball because it's what I love. And I think that I've been able to display a high basketball IQ as a player and as an analyst, and I would love at some point the opportunity to display it as a coach.
Doug, I don't want to talk about a single individual coach because I don't want you to have to get into calling people out or anything like that. But there's a number of coaches that have been rumored in association with the Oklahoma State job that are accomplished coaches. They've won their conferences. They've won in March. Why, with some of these guys that Oklahoma State is rumored to be thinking about, why would you be a better fit for OSU than they would?
Because everybody who's won at OSU has been an OSU guy, because I lived it as a player, that I know what it's like to unpack your bags in Stillwater, America, and be in kind of a foreign place and try to get to be part of the culture. I know what it takes to fill up that arena. I know what it takes, how you have to recruit there. I know what it takes to be a student athlete there, how you foster an environment, not just of personal growth for the players, but also where they become part of the student body. I think that's missing. There's not the close bond between the students and the players that there used to be when we were there. I think that's important. And I think you have to, in order to sell a place, to really sell it, it has to come from an honest place. It has to come from your gut. I think Stillwater's special that way. It's one thing for somebody who's been somewhere else to say, like, Stillwater's great, you got to come here, the arena's awesome, to have been there when it was at its peak, to have been there when it was a basketball school, to be able to bring together the Coach Sutton era and a new era, I think is what makes Oklahoma State special. I will never say a bad word about anybody who's up for the Oklahoma State job because, hey, maybe they decide to go a different way, and I got to be a good cowboy and get behind whoever the next head coach is. Just like, to be completely honest with you guys, I never once tried to undercut Travis, ever. And I've always been a little bit kinder to Travis than I have been to other coaches, which is against my general core philosophy, but it's because I knew that there were people that wanted me to be the head coach there. And I knew that deep down I wanted to be the head coach there, but I never wanted to let anybody think that I ever wanted him to be fired, you know? The decision was made completely out of my hands or out of my doing. But the idea behind it is, whether it's me or was me or somebody else, I think everybody should get behind it and support it. But the reason I'd be better is because we bring back 20 years of great history. We'd have a very, very similar both playing and recruiting style. And I think that I think it's important for my generation to take ownership of our school. I really believe that. I think it's important for if you're 30 to to 45 and 50. You know, for so long we have so many of these incredible benefactors who have made a ton of money, and they've given their hard-earned money to try and help Oklahoma State kind of raise their level. But you know what? It's our turn. This is our university. Our kids are starting to become college age, and we got to get it back to where it was, because the campus is better than it's ever been. The football is better than it's ever been. You got Olympic sports that I think are on the rise, and we get a new baseball state. But we got to get basketball back right. And I think this gives us the opportunity to heal some old wounds, to reinvigorate Gallagher Iba, and to build with somebody who, yeah, there's an ode to the past, but a thought about the future and knowing that what has worked. And it's only worked. We've only had two good eras of basketball at Oklahoma State that have worked, Mr. Iba and Coach Sutton. And if you take their core tenets, their philosophies, you put them into play, you get the right players, you recruit the same way that Coach Sutton recruited, in which people have copied that style and been successful with it other places. You play the same style, maybe a tad faster or more like they played when I was there. I think that's why I'm a better fit, because I truly love my university. My wife loves her university. Our kids truly love Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. That is our family. That is our home. And you can't sell something that you don't really, really know, you don't really, really love. And I can sell it from day one better than anybody else.
Mike Holder, obviously OSU guy through and through as well. He'll be the one making the ultimate decision. What is your relationship like with Mike Holder, and do you expect to hear from him about this job?
I think it's very good. And, you know, everything he said to, I think, to Mark Cooper from the Tulsa World is what I believe to be accurate, is that his wife is obviously the smartest member of that home. And that she gets it, she feels it, she knows it. He's always been professional with me. And then I think I told you guys last time when Sean got fired, I was a little upset, but I also didn't know some of the details that he let me in on. He told me about his thoughts in the decision and offered up kind of as an olive branch. Hey, who would you recommend? And we went through a list of 100 names. I would suspect that sometime in the coming days, he'll probably ask me the same thing. I mean, you know, I think neither of us are dumb, deaf, or blind. We know that the students have started that really cool, was it Bring Doug Home campaign? That's awesome. I know that I've had some boosters talk to him. Others have volunteered to write to him. I mean, all of that stuff, he's incredibly responsive. So I'm sure that we'll have the conversation, but our relationship is, I think I would consider him a friend and a bit of a mentor. Professionally, and somebody who I think he respects my basketball acumen, my knowledge of how the game works. And by the game, I don't just mean basketball game, but for some coaches, this is a game. This is put your name out there, flirt with the school, get a raise, rinse, repeat every off season. And so he's asked me in the past about it. I would suspect that he'll ask me about it sometime in the future.
Doug, one of the other criticisms is that a head coach of any sport is a leader of many people on your staff, obviously the student athletes. And I think one of the criticisms is not only have you not coached, but you've never necessarily led a larger type of organization outside of running your radio show and stuff. Do you feel like you have what type of experience do you feel like you have in leading people that could apply to a job like this?
I don't know. If you don't think I'm a leader, then I can't really convince you. You know, and I've said this to you guys in the past. Like I think I'm a pretty smart fella, and I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. And I think what happens is people operate under the assumption that when you are a strongly opinionated sports analyst, radio host, that you just like walk around the earth and spout off opinions, and that's how you live your life. Like, dude, that's my job. Like, that's my job. Like, let's just cut through it. Like, I know there are people who, like, there are some guys that are writers. Like, they don't like, oh, you're just too opinionated. Like, look, when I got to ESPN, we had Dick Vitale there, and Dick Vitale loves everybody. Say Bill Raftery was there then. He loves everybody and everybody loves him and he's funny and he's quirky. Like, how do you cut through? And so I just thought, you know what, if I ever get the chance, I'm going to be the guy that just spits the truth. That's it. And you know, I also understand that when you say things about certain teams because it does generate a reaction. Now, I truly believe what I say, but I wouldn't say it about, you know, it's like if I say something about pick a school, Middle Tennessee State, like nobody cares. There's no reaction generated. You say it about Kansas. You say it about Kentucky. You say it about UCLA, about Arizona, about Syracuse, and all of a sudden now people are talking about it. That's the job. So though I am strongly opinionated and I think strongly knowledgeable, I also know that, no, I've never run a business. I mean, have I run a radio show? Do I have people who report to me? Of course I do. Have I shown that I can be a leader? Of course. And I've been accountable for my own mistakes. And when there are other mistakes that are made during my show or during a basketball game, like, you've never ever heard me once blame anybody else for something that goes wrong. For example, just 2 days ago, we spent 2 hours putting together this all new Telestrator. I was so excited about it. I sent a text to my boss who bought this new equipment. We're going to kill it. We're going to show people things they've never seen before, blah, blah, blah. So the day I show up at the day of the game, and somebody had deleted all this. I mean, it was like an hour, 2 hours of work. And then Mark Grant, who's my director, he invested a bunch of time in putting these names in and details in. I mean, really good stuff, which we'll show people today. But when the thing goes bad on TV, I don't blame anybody else. I just simply kind of move on. That's called good leadership. You know, whenever we made mistakes in college, we didn't blame anybody else. It's good leadership. It's being accountable. So, if you have been around me, all I can do to prove to people that I can lead is think about all the other people who are friends and acquaintances of mine who are into the idea of me becoming a head coach. What does that show? That shows I can recruit people, right? And it's just recruiting for a cause is no different than recruiting a kid to come there. And two, it shows that I can lead and that they want to get behind. And the idea that we will fill that gym is because of my leadership skills, which you're born with. You can't read a book about, you know, I mean, maybe someday I'll write a book about leadership. But the truth is, like, you're either a born leader or you're not. You're either an alpha or you're not. And I would like to believe that most people who know me think, like, yeah, he could lead. Now, in terms of running an organization and budgeting and all of the other ancillary details, I'm not going to sit here and say that's easy, that's a snap. But that's why you hire really good people. You bring in a really good staff. And the staff doesn't just mean, well, I need guys to go get players. I need a good video guy. I need to trust my secretary, my academic advisor, my strength coach. I need to mobilize all these different people and allow them to do their job. Okay? And then I need to meet with them individually during a set time, either each week or each couple of weeks, depending upon their job, and be updated upon their progress. And then when things go wrong, I need to know how to handle it. All of these things would be new. But I think if you hire the right people, you empower them, and you make sure you do your research as to what type of people they are, you're taking a chance, but that's what leadership is about. And it's also about being, you know, holding yourself to the standard of, hey, I'm going to be accountable if they fail because I'm the one who hired them.
Mike Holder talked about some of the stuff he would like to see in the new head coach. He actually mentioned man-to-man defense and that identity that obviously Eddie Sutton and Mr. Iba had throughout the OSU history. What would your coaching philosophy be? I assume it wouldn't stray too far from Eddie Sutton.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, obviously, you know, I'm a proponent of hardcore, turn your ass to the glass, man-to-man defense. Some of the changes in the officiating has changed how you play. You can't chuck cutters the way you used to. You don't necessarily need to. We used to double post to post all the time. You don't necessarily need to anymore. Also, so few teams play with two low posts that, or have posts that can score, that you don't feel compelled to double post to post. And, you know, the way in which we used to rotate defensively, funneling people to the baseline, and then working on our slides every day, I still think that works. But to be totally honest with you guys, it's going to depend upon personnel. Like, ideally, I want to pressure the basketball, force it to one side of the court, don't let you reverse it. I want to define what a help side and a weak side is. That's what San Diego State does, for example. That's what NBA teams try and do. I don't want you to reverse the ball side to side on me, because once you do, that's when breakdowns occur. On the other hand, it depends on who I have, right? Like, how would I like to play? Sure. But, like, look, if I'm able to get the job, I want to retain as many players, if not all of them, as possible. And I think we can get a lot more out of Mitchell Solomon and out of Phil Forte. On the other hand, I'm also reasonable to believe that it's going to be hard to be rangy defensively and to shut off a side if I have Phil and Mitchell both out there. Right? It becomes prohibitively more difficult. So maybe you, depending upon personnel, you play some pack line, which is still very good on-ball man-to-man defense, only instead of forcing the ball to one side, you're in complete containment, which, by the way, that's how Villanova plays. They do what's called loading up on the basketball, balls on the side. You got three guys usually in help coming off of the weak side. They want to make you reverse. They want to make you the opposite, make you reverse the ball. And against teams that don't shoot the ball well and they'll force shots, that's a great defensive philosophy. So would I play man-to-man? Yeah. Do I want to pressure? Absolutely. But I'm also reasonable to think you got to be a pragmatist. You got to play differently every year based upon who your players are, who's healthy, who you're playing against. And I think that's the thing one of the differences in more new age thinking than some. And Coach Sutton was very pliable. Anybody who says, you know, like, we played zone, you know, we played zone because we had Glenn Alexander who couldn't guard anybody, but he could really shoot. So we played zone, right? We tried to call an amoeba zone and try to make it disguise it. You know, if I were to get the job and my brother was to come over, my brother would be my defensive coordinator. Now I would tell him I want to play, this is the man-to-man style I want to play, but he also coaches at Oregon State. And over the last 2 years, they've been able to take a program that was a dumpster fire for 20 years and win games and get to the NCAA tournament. How have they done it? One reason is they play this kind of quirky 1-3-1 zone. Look, Bill Self goes triangle too when he needs to. I think you want to have different things in your arsenal. I'm a pragmatist. I am not. It's a lot like the philosophy of how would you coach? You know, who would you hire? Like, look, things. Would I like to go out and get said player and said player and this guy and that guy? Yeah, but life happens, and I think really smart people understand that you can't be so bullheaded that you only play one way and you only do one thing, and the critics be damned, we're going to do it this way and eventually we'll get the personnel to play this way. Like, I want to win. I want to win, and to win, I think you have to put yourself in the best position every game to win. That's what Bill Belichick does, and that would be my core philosophy. Still man-to-man, we play some zone. Would love to pressure, but it would depend upon personnel.
Doug, you've talked a lot about getting people to help you out with what you're not great at, what you don't know. The thing that I'm curious about is, what do you feel like of the 1,000 different things you have to do as a head coach that you would be the best at, that you would be the most successful at, and then what you would be the worst at, that you would need the most help or the best people doing that job?
That's a great question. I think the two things I would be best at is, no one would be able to coach confidence better than me. You have to read people. You have to know who's up, who's down. You have to be able to convince. Let's take a Mitchell Solomon. Mitchell Solomon can play in the Big 12. Okay, he can play. He can make shots. He can absolutely be a part of your team. But he doesn't believe it all the time. So you have to figure out, how do I get this kid to play at a level above his actual talent, not below it? I can coach confidence. And look, some kids are overconfident. Some kids, you have to level them off. Some kids, you have to, you know, you have to crack on them in a practice because they're getting arrogant, and you need to level them off. I think reading kids, reading people, knowing players, that I can do. And then in terms of creativity offensively, I know it's hard for somebody to, who is like, well, you haven't coached, how would you know how to draw up a play? Like, because I can, because I played. When you play professional basketball, your there's twice the number of possessions, twice the amount of creativity. And that's really what Hoiberg brought to the table, was you understand what mismatches are and how to create them. I watched Phil Martelli the last couple of weeks here. I've done a couple of their games. They're now playing this evening. Perfect example. He has his best player, DeAndre Bembry, who's 6'7", who can handle the ball. His best scorer is Isaiah Miles, who is like who's a face-up 4-5 man. And all they try and do is create different actions in order to get a center guarding Isaiah Miles, because the center doesn't want to leave the lane, and Isaiah Miles can shoot out to three. And if you run out on him, he'll pump fake and drive by you. I mean, they'll post up DeAndre Bembry. So the ability to create mismatches, the offensive creativity, I think would be my strength, along with coaching confidence. Weaknesses? I would say that probably the biggest weakness would be focusing on which recruits you can get and which recruits you can't. Because I'm a more guy. I am indefatigable. I get a job, I want to go kill it. I want to go get every big name kid. Give me the kid, give me his parents, give me his AU coach, let's get it. But you have to be focused about it. You have to be smart about it. You have to strategically utilize your resources. And I need somebody who's done that before. In terms of game preparation, I think I'd be pretty good there, but I would also offer up help from my staff in terms of when we go hard, when we go light. I do think the player in me understands conditioning and confidence being way bigger factors than anybody can contend, but still knowing the ebbs and flows of when to practice, when to go hard, when to just have a more of a mental practice, those things that you need help with. And then, you know, the nuances of a game and when to sub, because, you know, I've always been a big field guy, and I do have my philosophy from my dad and from even how you sub and when you get guys in. But I think some of it, you need to offer up help from your staff. And then in terms of day-to-day practicing, my belief is, and this is how I've been raised, is what Larry Brown does, this is what Brad Stevens does, what I mentioned Randy Bennett earlier, what they do is same fundamentals on a daily basis: passing, catching, cutting. I saw an interview, which I retweeted earlier today, with Luke Walton. And Luke was talking about the triangle and how there's certain passing and cutting drills, spacing drills, that the Warriors run every day. People think the Warriors run motion offense, and they do, but they use the philosophy of the triangle. And the philosophy of the triangle, which I know because my dad coached with Tex Winter, and I know because I know the triangle from having played with the Lakers in a couple of different summer leagues and free agent camps. The triangle is not just about finding a triangle on a court. Like, that's for people who don't understand basketball. Triangle is about perfect spacing, 15 to 18 feet. Every drill the Lakers did when Tex was there, or the Bulls did when he was there with Michael Jordan, every drill they ever ran, passing, cutting, stretching, even stretching, everybody is 15 to 18 feet spread from each other. It's embedding that in your head. So I know fundamentally what I want to do every day. But in terms of making a practice plan and starting one place, ending in another place, and continuing the flow from the start of the season to the end of the season, that I would need help with. There's no question. So game planning some, but that's what assistant coaches are there for. Focusing and recruiting, because I would want to go and get everybody. And, you know, you need guys that go like, hey, man, we can't get him. Let's move on. What other than the fundamentals the core fundamentals that you want to work on every day in practice, kind of the ebbs and flows of pushing them and pulling them back, and those things you need help with and you need a really good staff for. And then you need a veteran, an old head, to sit there behind you and, you know, do I go get a technical now to even up the refs? Do I sit down and enjoy the win? Do I empty the bench? Do I sub? What do I do? I have my own beliefs, and I would make mistakes just like every coach makes mistakes. Even the best of the best makes mistakes. but I would have somebody who I really trust, who has been through there, that I turn and look at, and he tells me, not right now, or, yeah, now's the time.
Yeah, I think recruiting would be one of your biggest strengths, Doug. And Mike Holler's interview, I keep going back to it because it was very enlightening as far as what he's looking for in the next guy. He specifically mentioned recruiting Texas. Do you think you could be able to recruit Texas, and what sort of ties do you have to that state?
Two things. One, Texas is important. And I think you have to have somebody in your staff that has relationships in Texas, no question. Two, Texas is not everything, okay? Oklahoma is doing very well, correct?
Yep.
Yes?
Absolutely.
How many guys they have from Texas?
They're pretty good.
How many guys they have from Texas?
Is Christian James from Texas? I'm not sure. I'll have to look at the roster.
Again,
not very many.
Isaiah Cousins from where? Buddy Hield went to prep school in Kansas. Again, it doesn't mean – I'm not trying to diminish the Texas thing. I think Texas is important. The second greatest number – you know, the two states that have produced the most players in the NCAA tournament are Texas and California. I mean, I frankly think California we'd have on lock. Texas, we have relationships with John Lucas down in Houston, with other people in Houston, with Hal Pastner, who, of course, has been an iconic figure as Josh Pastner's dad, with Houston Hoops for years, and, of course, from the Dallas Mustangs to all the other AAU programs in Dallas. On your staff, you have to have somebody who has great relationships there. That's important. And I do know people there. But some of it is you don't want to be – you don't necessarily want to sit there and go like, well, we're all have our Texas ties, because then it becomes a little Hatfield and McCoys. And sometimes you won't get a kid just because of the ties you have. You're forever connected to one. It's a little bit like electing electing somebody who doesn't have a voting background. Nobody can judge you on it. And you have a clean slate when you walk into a gym. You go, hey man, look, I don't know what the previous guy did. And I just want to come in and recruit your player to come to Oklahoma State, and here's why. So, yes, I have relationships there. Yes, you obviously hire somebody who recruits Texas. That's important. Is it the end-all, be-all? It is not. Is it important? It is.
You've talked about this, Doug.
I mean, they're pretty good players in the state of Oklahoma. Pretty good players. One who's a junior, one who's from Oklahoma, who's a senior, who just decommitted. There's guys that are playing elsewhere that would love to come home, you know. Well, let's build a fence first, and then we'll go south, but we'll also go north. You know, we have people forget, like Oklahoma State people. We have Paul Graham's son Nick runs a very good program in Denver. Victor Williams, who of course was a redshirt my senior year, has a tremendous program in Kansas City. Brian Montanati is thoroughly involved in AU hoops in Tulsa. I have a lot of connections, and my boy Joe Atkins feels like he's got Oklahoma City on lock. So we got some people, and I got an army of people who want to help. Terrell Harris and TC are down in Texas working kids out, having their own programs. Like, how do you do it? That's how you do it. That's why it's important that you get an Oklahoma State guy. That's why I'm the guy who can say, hey, I'm going to go up to Kansas City. I'm going to hang out with Victor Williams for a day. We're going to go watch kids. Because even if I don't want any of Victor's kids, Victor knows all the other kids. You start to win the room. You start to make the connections with kids when they're 14, 15 years old, so that when they're 17, 18 years old, you either get them or they go somewhere else and you have a good relationship, and then you bounce back recruiting. That's the way the game is played.
Doug, you've talked about this, and this is something Fred Hoiberg talked about, but taking one thing from different people and having mentors that you take one thing from and stuff like that. So if you want to, I'd like to do kind of like a speed round real quick and just throw out coaches and what you take from. So we'll go Tom Izzo first. What do you take from Tom Izzo?
Great culture, great toughness. I think he goes too far in the direction of calling set plays. Like they call set plays, they call timeout. But I love how hard they run the court. His big thing is we're going to rebound, we're going to run the court. try and get easy buckets. But the biggest thing is that guy has an incredible culture, His assistants have bought into it. His players have bought into it. And their culture is built on toughness. Seniors kind of run the program. Seniors actually help coach the team. I think that's important. Those are the things you take from time to time.
Billy Donovan.
Billy was very creative, he played differently. He kind of changed the game with two things. One, he won national championships because he had two really athletic posts and they switched every ball screen. 80% of defense in college basketball is ball screen defense. And Billy Donovan proved that if you can get big guys that can move their feet laterally, contain the basketball, you can take somebody out of 80% of their offense, which also is you better have a plan for when people switch ball screens. So I think that's the first thing. Second thing was Billy had a very keen eye for conditioning, And the third thing is, and this is really something that he came upon late, which I'm a big believer in, he wanted his kids to go through mental health care. He felt like kids these days come from worse and worse backgrounds and that they need to have both individual and group counseling sessions, because sometimes he struggled to coach guys, and it wasn't until they were broken down and built back up by a clinical psychologist or psychiatrist that he thought he was able to get to them. Doesn't mean that every kid I have would have to go through that, but I do think that that's a good thing. You want to help round out the entire person, not just the player.
Sean Miller.
Two things. Their practices every day are as fundamentally sound as any you'll ever see. And they do things every day from catching the ball in the wing, pump fake, one dribble, improve your angle, feed the low post every day. They grind their guys to compete in every practice, in every drill. They don't necessarily practice the longest, but his practices are about fundamentals and about toughness. And while it's easy to take a shot at Sean Miller because they haven't gotten to the Final Four, they got bushwhacked by Wichita State. Think about this. His team has never lost in the first round at Arizona. And remember, Lute Olson, they won the national championship, got to a couple Final Fours, but they would get dusted in the first round. I think what he's built has been an unbelievable program. They're just tougher than other people. They compete on the boards, and he's not afraid to, in any game, somebody doesn't box out, somebody doesn't fulfill an assignment, boom, out they come, and he'll give them a stare. And they understand it, and the kids buy in and come back in and compete harder. So his program is about fundamentals every day in practice, about competing in every drill, and about holding players accountable. Players actually want to be held accountable. They just want you to be fair about it. And he holds them accountable by taking them out of a game when they don't do well, when they do something right, being praised for it.
And we'll go to the last one, Tony Bennett.
Cool. Tony is, first, he shows that you can be like most of these guys, he's a great person, classy person. And I've known Tony from back when he just got done playing and he started Wisconsin as a GA. One, Tony has a very good eye for talent. Leonard Parentes is a perfect example of that. He got him out of LA and he's going to be a 4-year starter at point guard. They got a shot to go to the Final Four. So eye for talent. I think he's tweaked the style of their defense. People say they play pack line, but pack line defense, he's actually changed as he's recruited length and talent athletically. Now they shut off one side of the court on ball screens. You can watch for that. But I think that the one thing I take from Tony Bennett, and this is important in differentiating myself from maybe Coach Sutton style offensively, hardest offense to guard is still motion. It's just is because you can't scout it. And they run really good motion. Now, we ran motion some. We were never a great motion team. And we talked about this on one of the last pods where Coach wanted to control where shots came from. I believe in that philosophy. But I think you have to have a motion game. You have to get the ball moving. You have to get touches. You got to make the defense. You have to make the other team defend you. You can't come down and just jack threes. Even if you want to shoot a high volume of threes with new analytics, and you have good 3-point shooters, I want to take threes. But I want that ball moving side to side. I want guys being screened. I want the defense to not know what's coming. and you look at what they built at Virginia, watch them play offensively. People think, oh, it's hard to watch. Bull. First of all, they average mid-70s this year because he's gotten better personnel. Secondly, they're running motion. There is no set play call, and you don't know what's coming. You're simply always looking, you got your head on a swivel because you're going to get screened by one of their big guys. I still think the most difficult offense to cover is the motion offense because it has great spacing, if taught correctly, has great spacing, great ball movement, and it can't be scouted for.
One more coach, Bill Self.
Pragmatic. He ran a triangle and two against Kentucky this year. And when they won the national championship, it backfired, but they ran triangle and two, and they made Memphis's bad shooters make shots, and they threw some in. He still runs high-low. That's still what he does. Now, he's changed high-low over the years, depending on who he has. A guy that can't pass the basketball or can't shoot, he'll have set a ball screen instead of catching the ball looking to go high-low. So he still does that, but he's changed. He's evolved. I also think if you go to his practices, like, he picks the guys he wants to ride, and he coaches the hell out of them. And he's willing to sacrifice the ego and maybe the relationship with the freshman for the betterment of the team. Like, I don't think he wanted to play Landon Lucas this much, but Landon Lucas is a better college basketball player than Shake Diallo. He's better fit for his team. He trusts, he knows what Landon Lucas is going to do when he gets the ball, as opposed to Shake, who's still just playing basketball, not understanding time score or any other kind of ramification of his action. So, but I think that he's a marvelous coach. They have an incredible program. But very matter of fact with how he recruits people, he's honest with them. And maybe because you're at Kansas, you can be more honest with people. But the number one thing that he's, what can I do to win this game? He is a pragmatist. Sure, he wants to climb up in you defensively. I want to turn your ass to the glass. They play really, really, really hard. And he will not recruit guys that don't play hard, which is another part of it. Like, I talked to Nick Cronin. Nick Cronin's like, he has his assistant go and tell people that they like, they don't play hard. Hey, I'm not even going to come bring Mick down here unless you play hard. And some kids buy in, some kids don't. But the number one thing I take away from Bill is he's willing to make the big decision to win the game, even if that means, hey, I got to sit in the zone, or I got to go to a triangle and two, or a box and one, or I got to play slower, or I got to play faster.
Carson, I've got one more. Do you have any more?
Quickly. Kyle and I have talked a lot about Fred Hoiberg, and we get really frustrated when people say, well, Fred was in a front office of an NBA team. That somehow would make him more prepared than you, Doug. Can you just eviscerate that notion for me real quick?
I don't know. I mean, it's silly. So was Chris Mullen. I spent time with him, and people point to Chris Mullen, their record at St. John's this year. I'll just explain to you, next year St. John's will probably win 18 games or so, maybe 20. That they punted on this year because Lavin had graduated seven players and they hadn't signed a single player. And so instead of taking bad students or guys that thought they were one and done, they took a couple of fifth years, recruited a bunch of freshmen, and they have a stellar recruiting class. But I don't know. Ask Mully. Ask you. Feel free to ask Bird. I mean, I can put you in touch with either guy. I've obviously discussed things with both. And I don't know. That's just silly. It's are you involved in basketball if you're in the front office? Sure. You're involved in basketball. You go to practices, you go to games, you watch tape, you're involved in the day-to-day, like, no question. You're not coaching. And even when you're an assistant coach, like, assistant coaches will tell you, like, I want to coach. I want my own team. Because the guy that makes the decisions is the guy who's 18 inches away. And it's a big jump. It's a big chair. I don't know. I mean, You can't explain that to somebody who's just silly. It shouldn't diminish what Fred was doing then. You know, Fred went to the front office because he had a heart problem. Otherwise, he would have played forever because he was a great player. And, you know, Fred watched, took notes, he listened. Flip was one of the iconic offensive minds in the sport. And Flip Saunders was revered as a basketball coach, still is, despite his death. Obviously. So I'm not saying he didn't learn a ton. You do. And it's a different perspective when you go from playing to now in the front office, because when you're in front office, it's a lot like me when I go into meet. Like, people tell me things that they would never tell players. Coaches say things amongst themselves they never say to the players. And then they talk about, all right, who's going to be good cop, who's going to be bad cop, right? I mean, this is all part of what coaching is about. Manipulating players to believe in themselves and in what you're doing. So I don't want to diminish what Fred was doing, but let's not act like he was a head coach in the NBA. He hadn't coached before. And, you know, Mike Matheny hadn't managed before. Robin Ventura hadn't managed before. I mean, I could go through it like, okay, Robin's not working, whatever, with the White Sox. It's not because he doesn't know what he's doing. It's because they haven't had good players. It's a great argument to make. Hey, look, if you don't like me, it's okay. If you don't like the idea, that's okay. You're not going to win 100% of the people with the idea of hiring somebody who hasn't coached. But I'll tell you this, that unlike anybody else, it's, you guys watch The Bachelor, right? Kyle, you're a big Bachelor guy, aren't you?
My wife watches.
You've never watched The Bachelor?
I've seen it.
Okay.
I didn't want to admit that.
They always ask, what is the question that they always ask of people in the first couple episodes of the show?
Of the contestants?
Mm-hmm.
What are your intentions?
Correct. Which is the big thing you have to understand. I am, like The Bachelor, in it for the right reasons. I'm not in this for personal glory. There's a lot more personal glory if you're on TV on Selection Sunday at the Final Four. It's a lot easier gig. I understand the idea of failure is a possibility. I don't think it's a likely outcome, but it's a possibility. And if you fail at your alma mater, it makes it really hard to go home again. You got to suck it up, and people who weren't nice to you because they had to fire you have to suck it up, and you have to. Everybody has to put their big boy pants on. I understand that. I'm also would be potentially giving away an unbelievable space in both radio and TV. Like, I'm sacrificing for this. Why? Because I'm in it for the right reasons. I'm in it because I love my school. I love basketball, and you know, when my dad died about a year and a half ago, I kind of took some stock of what have I done? What do I want to do? Who do I want to be? And, you know, I'm so touched by, you know, every time I go into a gym, I'll have a kid. There's a kid named Mike Thomas who plays for Hawaii. And yesterday I was hanging out with him. He goes, hey, you know, I played in your dad's team. I said, I know that. He said, do you know I played in your dad's team when we beat the Soldiers? Just so you know, Oakland Soldiers, great AU program. At the time, they had Nick Johnson, Brandon Ashley, Drew Gordon. They had all these dudes. And my dad's team, ragtag team, I mean, Division I players, but by comparison, beat their ass by like 16, right? It's like his best AU story ever. Like his best tour team story, we beat UCLA. We handed UCLA their worst loss in Pauley Pavilion history. So like his two greatest wins were not like, he's got good college wins from back in the day, but we beat UCLA with the tour team, and like I was like the player coach, and he was the head coach, and then we beat the Oakland Soldiers. Anyway, when Mike said that to me, it just kind of reverberated all the things I thought, which is my dad changed people's lives. My dad was somebody who tried to facilitate their personal growth by getting kids college scholarships, by trying to put them in a position to succeed in life. And that's what I want to do. Look, the only person who I've really ever helped, or people I've helped, are my family. I've been able to make a healthy living, create a very good life for myself in this profession, on the multitude of platforms that I perform on. And I can continue to do that, but am I helping anybody? Am I making anybody's life better? Am I taking a boy and spitting out a man the way the college process does? That's what I want. I want to help. I want somebody to go through the metamorphosis I went through when I got to Stillwater. I want people to experience the pure elation, the pure joy, the buzz you get from walking into and walking out of a game at Gallagher Arena. I want to do that. I want that for my school, and I want to be a part of it. I'm not going to take sole credit for it. We're going to do it as family, from helping recruit kids to put people in the seats to getting the players to understand the historical figures that have come before them. Those guys are going to be in the locker room. Those guys are going to be part of practice. Coach Sutton is going to be part of what we do. And that experience, I think, will be a life-changing 2 to 4 years for a kid's life. Additionally, I mean, if anyone who grew up in Oklahoma knows, how special Gallagher Iba is, how special the program can be when it's up and when it's humming. Those are the reasons that I'm in it. And whether it's my dad dying and me understanding that as much as I think I've accomplished, I haven't helped anybody else, or whether it's turning 40 and thinking, you know what, I have this in me. Everybody I know thinks I have it in me. You know, I'm willing to put myself out there. I'm willing to walk across the bar and walk up to what I think was a beautiful, beautiful woman, Oklahoma State basketball, and ask her out. And you know what? If she says no, okay. But if I don't ask, she can't say yes.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Michael Jordan.
my last question was going to be to pretend like that you're receiving the job 4 weeks from now and pitch me on everything. But I think that's pretty much what you just did. So I guess my actual last question is, what did we not ask you that you wanted us to ask? What questions did we miss that you would have asked if you were us?
If I was in your seat, what I asked you?
Yeah.
Trying to think. I don't know. What do you think is important to people? What do you think is important to people?
I think that having a program that you can be proud of is important to people. And I think that means a lot of different things. Part of that is winning.
That's a great statement. I mean, somebody texted me today and said, hey, did you go to class, you know, when you were there? And I said, yeah, I went to class. I might have had a newspaper with me, might have had an Ocali with me, but I went to class. And this is back to the in it for the right reasons. Is I know you can take online classes. I know those are legal, and sometimes it's a great way to manipulate the schedule. I want our student athletes to go to class on campus. I want them to be a part of the student body. I want them to go to other sporting events, because if we support them, they will support us. My plan, if you will, is more encompassing than just we're going to recruit the players, that we're going to change the schedule some. The schedule is already, I believe, difficult for the coming year with Maryland, the Maui Classic. But, look, they haven't taken a foreign trip in 4 years. So one of the things that I want to do is I want to go on a foreign trip. Now, the foreign trip allows you for 9 practices beforehand. But I don't want to do 9 practices on campus. I want to do some practices off campus. I want to go to where the people are. I want to go to Enos, where I played, and where there's a big Oklahoma State stronghold. I want to go to Bartlesville. I want to go to Edmond. I want to go to Tulsa. I want to go maybe to Lawton. I don't know if we'll go to L-Town or not. It's a bit of a track. Maybe we'll go to Ponca or we'll go to Cushing. Anyway, the idea is I want to have open practices so that people know we're the stage team. We've always been the stage team. And we're going to build this thing back up from the right way. Additionally, it'll be people's ability to come and see us coach, see my staff coach, see our players, get to know our players. Because it really is, people want to say, well, it's so different from radio. Radio is a relationship. Really, really good radio is a relationship. You know my kids, you know my wife, you know what makes me tick, you know what ticks me off. Being a fan is being a fanatic. That is about a relationship. You have to know our players, know our coaches, know our team, know our style. Remember, we're battling now, not just whether or not you're going to pay exorbitant ticket prices to come sit at Gallagher Iba with a team that, you know, this past year was 9th out of 10 teams. We're not just battling that. We're battling the Thunder. Okay? We're battling the fact that every game is now on TV. We're battling the fact that tickets are easier to come by and there are more things to do. You can either watch it on your phone. You can watch it, you know, on your tablet. You can watch it in a bar. Or you can just like, hey, you know what? There's a bunch. They're not big games or whatever. We're battling all those things. How do we get people to get in their car and get to the game? How do we get students to get off of their devices and come to the games? How do we own Stillwater? How do we get people to drive from Edmond, from Broken Arrow, from Bartlesville, from Tulsa, from Southside, whatever? How do we get them to do that? We do that because we take the players, we take the team to the people. Then we go on a foreign tour. And what we do with a foreign tour is we start to develop our culture. They start to understand what makes me tick, how I want to coach, how I want them to play. We use it, we play 6 games. We do that because we'll be ahead of the curve when we come back and we start practice. But, you know, I wouldn't overdo it in practice, but I would want to be ahead of it so that when we step foot on soil in Maui, we show that Oklahoma State basketball is back and that we're playing at a high level again. We're recruiting at a high level, competing at a high level, and we're a complete unit. So, you know, I think that the idea of, are there other former players that have, you know, I read Barry Trammell's article. He talked about Clyde Drexler. Hey, guess what, Barry? Clyde Drexler showed up. This is a true story. He asked one of his assistant coaches, what time's the game, first game of the year? They're like 7:05. Clyde Drexler walked into Hofheinz at 7:02 because somebody told him he got to be there at 7:05. Right? So former players don't always work. Okay, I'm aware of it. It hasn't always worked. Alums haven't always worked. But I'm not going to show up at 7:02 for a 7:05 game. I have a complete and developed plan. I would within the realm of my budget, whatever the budget is, I would hire an unbelievable staff. Addition to the staff, we would have some orange sprinkled throughout the branch, throughout the program, meaning we're going to make sure we pay homage to the people who have built that building. And we're going to take the team to the people. We're going to recruit players that go to class, that carry themselves in the right way, have a coach that carries himself with great dignity. You know, we're not going to be hanging out at the bars. We're not going to be acting in a way in which is not becoming of a representative of the entire state of Oklahoma. And slowly but surely, we'll earn the relationship. We'll get out of the friend zone and into the, man, I love, I'll get in my car and I will drive from Timbuktu to come see you at Gallagher Iba because it is the rowdiest arena in the country. And we'll bring back the rowdy.
Seems like a good place to end it, Doug. Hey, we really appreciate you coming on. We appreciate your time, and we'll definitely be following this as it moves along.
If I lose my voice tonight, I am blaming both of you on the next broadcast.
Give us a shout out.
Yeah, that's
the broadcast.
That's fine.
Yeah, that'd be good, right? Right. And yeah. And you know, there is one thing I should say. The guys at CBS have been really cool about this. They said, "Hey, look, if you interview for this, please tell us." They said, "But do you want this?" And I told them what I told you guys. I love my family, and then I love my school. And they understand that. And this is not in any way poo-pooing the honor that I have of calling NCAA tournament games. It's just me walking over to what I think is still a beautiful woman and saying, "What do you think?"
Yeah, it's a great way to put it.
Awesome.
Doug, we appreciate it. Good luck with the games tonight, and we will hopefully talk soon.
All right, boys. Go Pokes.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Right, see ya. That was interesting. I think Doug made a compelling case for anyone that was doubting his candidacy, don't you think?
Yeah. Should we just forward this straight to Mike Holder, or do we need to post it first, or what?
Just post it and send him a link in his email. I think a lot of people will be interested to hear Doug lay out everything he just did. I mean, he covered it so well, I ran out of questions. I mean, I just say, put that guy on the job for 3 years, and I guarantee you, you'll probably like the results. That's where I come off on the whole thing.
I mean,
listen to him.
I don't even know what to say. I mean, that was... As fascinating as we thought the conversation was going to be, it was beyond that. I mean, I'm just blown away by just his, I don't know, just like the way he thinks about things, his philosophies. And not in the sense that they're like he's like the most intelligent human being ever, but just the fact that you can tell that he's thought about it a lot and he has planned a lot for something like this happening, and now it's happening. And is he going to be hired? Probably not. But I just want people to understand that it's not an absurd notion, that it's a real thing, that it's a thing that could and we think would work. I don't know. I mean, I'd hire him.
He's a unique personality, and I think that's important to note. Like I kind of mentioned it in the last podcast, like you and I don't think Doug would be a good coach because he played point guard at OSU. Like yeah. that's part of it. He's an OSU guy. You can tell he understands it better than probably anyone they could possibly hire. But he wasn't like this overwhelming, you know, OSU fan favorite hero type. Doug had a lot of detractors while he was a player. The reason why I and you, I assume, and most people that are on the Bring Doug Home bandwagon think he would be a good coach is everything he just laid out. But from his family to how he's been able to glean insight from other coaches to just his strict basketball knowledge. He was dropping stuff that goes way over my head as far as basketball goes. He's not just some talking head that shows up to work and just spouts off opinion. Like, there's a reason why I think he's a viable candidate, and it has much less to do with the fact he played basketball at OSU under Eddie Sutton. That's a big part, no doubt. He wouldn't be up for the job if he didn't. But I just feel like it's a unique situation with a unique guy at a unique time, which very much so was the case with Fred Hoiberg, which we talked about during the podcast. That is why I think Doug would be a good fit. I think we get all this hate on Twitter about Doug, and that's just a ridiculous notion. I defy anyone to just listen to what we listen to and say it's a ridiculous notion.
Yeah. I think if you listen to that, if you can listen to that hour of Doug talking about Oklahoma State, about the future, about GIA, and be like, yeah, I don't think it would work, then more power to you. Because, and maybe it wouldn't work, but if you can listen to that and still say that, I don't know how you can do that. You know, like, I don't know. I get where people are coming from. I get that he hasn't coached before. But like he said, and somebody else said this, John Hoover, the franchise, interviewed a bunch of coaches and the coaches that were in Oklahoma City about Gottlieb. I hope this was in this post because I'm pretty sure it was. And one of the coaches, it might have been the Northern Iowa coach, said, "Coaching is coaching, whatever. Like that's not the deal. The deal is making 1,000 different decisions every day and handling all the people involved and getting recruits and all this different stuff." And I feel like that's the stuff that Doug would be good at. You know, like the in-game coaching, I feel like is what. And he talked about that a little bit, like preparation and the rhythm of a season. Like that's the stuff that he would need help with. But the actual like decision making and recruiting and all that stuff. I think you think this too. I feel like he'd be lights out at stuff like that.
Yeah, I think he would. And you mentioned that article. It was fascinating to see the quotes. Like Lon Kruger thought Doug would be. Lon Kruger was one of his biggest advocates in that article you mentioned by John Hoover. Ben Jacobson vouched for him.
That's the Northern Iowa guy.
Yeah, and the coach at A&M, Billy Kennedy, he did note that it would be difficult for Doug to build recruiting relationships because it said it took him a while to do that in the state of Texas. But Doug answered, I thought, the recruiting questions very well. This guy has a wide net of connections and ties, and the fact that he's been on TV doesn't hurt it either. But, yeah, I think that's like the least of my concerns is what you just mentioned. I mean, it's just – I thought he did a fantastic job addressing concerns and giving answers. And I think if he's able to, I'd love to be a fly on the wall if he meets Mike Holder, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. We'll let it stand at that. Speaking of losing jobs from CBS, I might be about to lose mine because I am not tending to the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So I need to go.
I got to go to work as well. So let's not get fired.
Yeah, let's not get fired. We'll wrap this up. And hopefully everybody enjoyed that. We've had a blast covering this, and we're only 2 days into the OSU coaching search. So we will be back next week to talk about it more. Maybe some more information will have emerged. And, yeah, I'll talk to you then, Carson.
Sounds good.
All right, bye.